I'm losing my nerve. I don't even know this guy.
Can't check it out now.
Why am I doing this?
Helena?
Hello, Kenny. Kiss me, Kenny.
It's a real honor hosting with you guys. My last big college party, but it's gonna be the best!
Happy Hog Night, children!
Hog Night?
Hog Night, that's right!
Well, they had to abolish it. Something happened one year and they had to kick a whole bunch of guys out of school.
Now, I promised these dorks I was gonna come up with something truly special.
Yeah, really special. Put a kid in the hospital.
What do we have in common? You and me and Mitchie and the guys?
Kenny Hampson! You're stunned with the corpse?
Doc, he was sick. I went to the hospital just afterwards. They wouldn't let me see him. They said he killed somebody before.
They might have switched disguises.
You know, it'd be hard to tell.
These girls look faint. Can we do anything to revive them?
I don't know, maybe some kind of injection?
Jeez, I was scared out there. I couldn't find you, and I'm thinking this wacko's gonna jump out at me any minute.
Mitchie? Mitchie?
Let's sit down.
Now, just wait a minute. Something happened to her.
She's dead.
It's a joke. A goddamn practical joke.
Kenny, I'm sorry. I never told you. I'm so sorry.
You haven't changed.
Hi, I am Jamie Lee Curtis, star of Halloween, Prom Night, and Terror Train. And you are listening to the 100th episode of The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are.
Wow.
Can you imagine? that came, we got an anonymous email from Jamie Lee Curtis, or, well, presume it's from Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, obviously it is.
Yes.
It sounds just like her.
I know.
It's Jamie Lee Hawking, actually.
It could be. But yes, she sent us, or somebody claiming to be Jamie Lee Curtis sent us... that intro, it was from a Gmail account. It was Inga69 that it came from, but I presume
Eric?
It must be her pseudonym. But yes,
no,
welcome,
Inga from Bloody Moon.
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it? All the kind of 6 degrees of separation going on there. But yes, welcome to an epic episode of The Hysteria Continues, because it is our 100th big one, and we are going to be covering a big one as well. We are going to be hopping aboard the Terror Train, so a little bit later. So, but we've also got, we're going to be looking back at the last 100 episodes throughout this one with some clips. And just to get started, I've got this little one just to wet your whistle, as it were.
Friday, the 13th, 12 of her friends were murdered.
You never should have been born!
Well, welcome to The Hysteria Continues. It's a new podcast from the creators of Hysteria Lips. That's me, Justin. And The Body Count Continues, which is Joseph. Hello, Joseph.
That's me.
Hi, Joseph. And we're also joined by Eric, who's one of my number one reviewers. Hi, Eric.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. And we're going to be doing the same jokes, I think, that we've already rehearsed, which is basically this is the international United Nations of Slasherdom, because I'm in...
So there you go.
Yikes. That's,
yikes.
Wow.
Listen to that quality, or lack of.
The quality was so bad for Nathan, he wasn't even there.
Yes.
Yeah, I ditched out at the beginning.
Yeah, Nathan didn't show up until the sequel, as we know. So
Part 3, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was part 3, the part trilogy. Three.
Yes, the trilogy. But yes, that was. It all sounded like we were recording through tin cans, and perhaps we were, because that was, when was that, January 2011, was it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow, okay. So we've been around for...
4 years.
4 years. 4 years,
yeah.
4 years. Mm-hmm. Math's not my strong point. But yes, well, perhaps if you stuck with us through thick and thin, thank you, or you're a new listener, then you can go back and listen to our kind of our slightly more DIY shows from the beginning. But thank you for joining us for this very special episode. So without further ado, how are you doing, Joseph?
I'm doing quite well on this rainy morning here in Chattanooga. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, there you go. Well, that's good. That's good. And I imagine it's exactly the same time morning for you, Nathan, isn't it?
Yeah, it actually is. I mean, everybody else here is asleep in their comfy, comfy beds. Good night, everybody.
Well, there you go. So that's dedication for you. And Eric, how's your dedication?
It's good, although if it had been recording 24 hours ago, I don't think I would have been able to be here because I was very, 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 very hungover.
Were you? Well, yes, we had some rather distressing messages on Facebook.
Very disturbing.
Not distressing. Maybe disturbing is better, about what you would do to a certain cast member. not of us, as it were. Although, as promised on Facebook, we will be discussing which cast member of the Hysteria Continues almost got up close and personal with somebody from Terror Train. Yes, but we'll keep you in suspense a little bit longer. But we'll finger the right person in a little while.
Ooh.
So yes, I'm doing okay. I've got a bit of a sore throat. My weekend's been a bit of a clusterfuck. We just had a friend down. We meant to go and see a Smiths tribute band last night, and then we got ready to go out, and then realised it was actually on Friday night rather than Saturday night. So
you missed it, or you were too early?
We missed it by 24 hours. Yeah. That was my weekend. Anyway,
were you drinking too much? You forgot what day it was?
Well, no, we did go out and have quite a few drinks on the Friday night with a friend. The friend was down, but Stuart said, she said, "Oh, I think it was tonight." And he said, "No, it's tomorrow night." And then luckily, well, not luckily, it was 24 hours too late. I picked up the tickets, and it was in fact the night before. So anyway, that is my life. So, Terror Train. Before we get to Terror Train, let's talk some recently seen. Let's rattle through those. So, Eric, have you got anything you've watched?
Yes, on your recommendation, I did a double bill of Wreck 3 and Wreck 4. So, Wreck 3 Genesis is again, it's a found footage film for the first 15 minutes set at a wedding reception. It ditches that format 15 minutes in and kicks into a more traditional movie vibe. And I was quite thankful, actually, to see that. It's nice to see the movie from a non-shaky cam point of view, where you can actually see what's going on. As I said, it's set in a wedding where one of the relatives turns up and he's been bitten by, I think it was a dog, he said. And later on at the reception, he starts vomiting blood. And before you can say, eek, a zombie, there's loads of zombies running around and killing everyone at the wedding. And now this one has a weird tone, because the first two Wreck films are quite deadly serious. And this one is laced with very silly humor, very, very silly humor at times. From the badass bride in her blood-battered dress wielding a chainsaw to this ridiculously silly character called John Sponge. He's a children's entertainer who is trying to be like SpongeBob SquarePants, but trying to be different enough from him so he doesn't get sued. So he goes around calling himself John Sponge. So he gets this guy dressed as SpongeBob SquarePants basically going around, you know, kicking zombie ass. Although he looks more like a potato, if you ask me, than a sponge. But so it was quite fun. Not sure the humor worked too well in the, you know, in the pantheon of the Wreck series, but I did enjoy it. I then went on to Wreck 4 Apocalypse, which is one you watched recently, Justin. Again, it doesn't use the found footage formula, although it does carry over the character of Angela, who is the heroine, I suppose you'd call, of the first two movies. And it's set aboard a ship where scientists have taken various survivors of the plague to see if they can work out an antidote to the plague. Again, it's a solid effort. The absurd humor from part three has gone, more or less. It does feel quite mainstream and commercial, though. I did enjoy it. Probably not, three and four, probably not up to the standards of the first two, I didn't think. But I did enjoy three and four. And certainly, you know, by the time part four rolls around, you'd be forgiven for it being utter shit. But I think the Wreck series is still pretty solid.
Well, isn't it, aren't they different directors who did part three and four? Were they two directors for the first one or the first two?
Yeah, the same directors for the first two, I think.
Okay, and then they split off and did one each, didn't they?
Three and four do feel very different in tone, so it wouldn't surprise me. I didn't really look into the background of who was directing, to be honest.
I might be wrong on that, but I think that was the case. But I'm glad you saw them. But you haven't seen them, Nathan and Joseph, have you?
No,
I don't even think I've seen any of the Wreck films yet.
Oh, really?
You're the found footage aficionado.
Yeah,
I know. I've kind of grown out of that, but I mean, not really. I mean, they're just getting progressively worse. So, but I do need to see them at some point.
Yeah, otherwise you've got a gaping hole. Yeah. So, Anything else?
Yeah, I just saw one other film. It's an Irish movie from last year, actually, called The Canal. It's set in Dublin, where an Englishman and his wife and child have just moved into this new townhouse where, you know, ho-hum, a murder happened a century ago. And he's a film archivist, and he finds this scratchy archive footage of the police recovering the bodies from this murder that happened a century ago from the nearby canal. And then our lead character finds out his wife is having an affair. He collapses in grief at the side of the canal and sort of witnesses this shadowy figure killing his wife. And now the tone of the movie is very much like something like The Machinist or Session 9. So it might appeal more maybe to, because I know Joseph's a big fan of Session 9, although I'm not comparing the two because it's definitely of lesser quality. However, it is very well made. And, you know, for an Irish horror movie, it was surprisingly entertaining and felt very international, I suppose, is the thing. The best scene of the film is totally, totally ripped off from Ringu and, you know, the remake of The Ring. It's still effective, but it's like, I can't believe they've taken, you know, this scene, you know, shot for shot from Ringu. I think it's probably a film made for people who aren't that familiar with horror movies. And there's one incredibly bad child actor. Now, he's only about four, so, I mean, you need to cut him. Well, you should cut him a bit of slack, but I'm not going to. Oh, there's my love beads again, because he's totally channeling Edith Massey or Ronnie Blakely or something, because he's the worst child actor I have ever seen in a film. So it's a valiant enough effort. It's above par as far as Irish horror cinema goes, but it was completely non-essential. It's called The Canal, if you want to seek it out. It's on Netflix US.
Okay. Well, I might track that down. Yes. Cool. Well, thank you, Eric. How about you, Joseph?
The only thing I've watched is Clown, which was it was produced by Eli Roth. It's basically about a guy whose son is having a birthday party and he wants a clown to appear at his birthday party, and the clown can't make it. So the father finds this clown costume and he puts it on, and basically he turns into this psychotic clown and he just starts killing kids, you know, here and there. It was pretty good. Kind of bland. My problem is that it's one of those movies that you feel like it's missing something, but you don't really know what. I mean, it certainly doesn't really pull any punches, you know, with a clown going around like brutally killing like little children. So it's got that going for it, and it's got some great, you know, imagery and some good gore effects and some fairly, you know, ha-ha black humor, not too silly and over the top. But I don't know, it just felt like it was it just kind of felt, you know, middle of the road. I would recommend it, but it's not something I would, you know, rush to see. But it's fairly good. I'd give it like maybe a 5 out of 10 maybe.
Okay. Did Eli Roth direct it or just produce it?
No, he just produced it.
Okay.
I saw that as well, actually.
Okay.
I'd probably be more generous. I might give it a 6 or 7 because it has a supernatural angle. Joseph was saying that he puts on this clown costume, but what happens is he can't take the clown costume off. It, like, he even tries to use power tools to remove the costume and he can't because it's got this supernatural force, and the clown nose starts, organically attaching itself to his nose, and the same with his wig. So, because there's something about it's the costume itself is possessed by some ancient demon. And that's kind of what I liked about it. I thought going into the film it was going to be, oh, it's just some kind of psychological meltdown this guy has when he dresses as a clown, or he was raped by a clown when he was young or something. But no, it has a supernatural element that I quite liked, and it actually ends up turning into a monster movie.
What's that?
But I enjoyed it.
The effects when he turns fully into the clown, I think they're really well done.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
And I do love the – I mean, I don't want to get into, you know, too many spoilers, but I love the I guess you'd call it the last basically half hour at the little playground, the indoor playground thing. Mm. But I don't know. I just felt like they set up too many things and they forgot, like, Peter Stormare's character, who's basically trying to stop him. You know, they just kind of write him off, you know, in a very nondescript way. I don't know. It just kind of felt like it needed a little bit more to it. I mean, it's certainly, you know, well made and it's entertaining enough, but I don't know. It's missing something for me.
Yeah, I would agree there. Yeah, I would say it's absolutely no classic, and it's 100 minutes and could maybe have done with being 80.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
But it is very well made. It looks like something you would see in the cinema. I don't know if did it get a cinema release in the States.
No.
No, yeah. But it looks very like professional and high budget, and give it a watch, I'd say.
There was another film, wasn't there, that sounds very similar about someone dressed as a clown who can't take their wig off. What was it called? Oh, let me look it up. The Story of Toya.
Yeah, I knew that's what you were going with this, you stupid man. You're such a stupid man. You're so stupid.
Well, I think that's a good point before we come on to Nathan. Here's one of the clips that we, and this is the origins of Inga.
Eric, did you want to wrap anything up, or is that...
No, that's it, I think, on Bloody Moon. Just wondering which one of us would be the Antonio. I think it would be me, personally.
I think it's probably...
No, he's not a bear. He's not bear enough.
No, but everyone loves me. Do you know? No?
No, we hate you.
Okay, who'd be the Inga, then?
Justin.
You're the Inga. Justin.
Me?
Eric's the Inga, yes.
Yeah, you're definitely the Inga.
That's horrible.
Why?
I'm so hurt. I don't have those mood swings. I do bounce up in my bed trying to make people think I'm scoring, but otherwise, there's no connection.
You sure? Well.
So one great Latin lover thinks he can just sit there thinking he's God's gift to women, you Latin fraud.
Oh,
Eric. So that was one of the classic clips.
Oh, then, Eric, an apology. I didn't know I was the first one to suggest he was Inga.
Yeah.
It's all your fault. Sorry, Eric.
It's all your fault, Nathan.
I apologize, Eric.
Yeah, I'm going to come back like Kenny Hampson and kill you all.
No, I'm Jamie because I'm the one that's apologetic, so I should survive.
Okay. Well, I've got a feeling Inga might reappear a little bit later. But, Nathan, what are your picks for the week?
Well, first of all, I'm really scared because we're on Skype and I just watched Unfriended twice in the last week.
It got scathing. Patrick at Screen Queens gave a scathing review.
Oh, he hates it. I think he's posted several status updates just about how much he hates that movie.
So, but you have a slightly different opinion, I believe.
I'm probably on the totally opposite end of the spectrum here because I loved it. It's one of those movies that I understand why somebody would not like it. Like, I can understand why they wouldn't like it, but to me it works because I like movies like that where, a group of despicable people get what's coming to them. I'm a fan of revenge. So I like that aspect of it. And, it's not a scary movie, but it's totally one of those turn your brain off and just, enjoy it. And that's the kind of movies that I like, as long as I'm not bored, as long as I'm entertained. And who thought I, could be entertained from watching somebody else's computer screen for an hour and a half or so?
Is it, because what I've heard it compared to is a film called The Den, which I've not seen. Has anyone
I liked
seen
Unfriended
film?
Better than The Den.
Did you? Okay.
Because The Den, to me, it was really good until we find out what's going on in the den, and then it just became kind of ludicrous. And I thought it kind of took away from the first hour of the movie where it was legitimately creepy.
Right. Okay. Joseph, have you seen Unfriended yet?
No, not yet.
No. Okay. And Derek, it's not come out here yet, is it?
No, it comes out next Friday.
Are you going to go and see it?
I'm away next weekend in Spain. So if it lasts more than a week, I'll probably go see it. Yeah.
Okay.
It looks kind of like the kind of film that might be here for a week and then go.
Right.
I'm very concerned that I'm going to be the only person on this podcast that likes it.
Well, so are you not used to that, Nathan?
Well, I'm a little used to it.
Well, exactly. So, well, we'll see. But I think it's from what people have said, it's it may have a better home on video, well, on home. On the TV, it might work better.
The killer has a very wicked sense of humor.
I'm going to wait to watch it on my computer. It'll be more fitting that way.
Yeah. But it's, the killer has a very twisted sense of humor that I really liked. And like I said, these are just the kind of teenagers in this movie that you kind of want to see killed brutally.
Well, that's always the way, isn't it? Teeny kill pictures, the return. So it's not a slasher movie, is it? But it's a body count movie.
Yeah, it's a body count movie. Yeah, that's what I call it, because they do get killed one by one until the last one standing.
Okay, cool. And it's funny, kind of comparison, or not comparison, but with the Terror Train is that it's an independent picture that was picked up by a major, wasn't it, I believe. Unfriended wasn't made by whoever put it out. I think they picked it up as an independent movie, from what I heard. Anyway, I might be wrong about that. But yeah, okay. Is anything else, Nathan?
I watched Starry Eyes, based on Joseph's recommendation. And I really enjoyed it, too. I think I much prefer the Babadook, because I watched them kind of around the same time. But I thought Starry Eyes was also a really well-done movie, and it's kind of a metaphor about the price of fame and what people will do to get famous. You know, I like that aspect of it. The only thing that it does, and it's kind of a pet peeve of mine in any movie, is there's a scene where a guy, and I'm not going to spoil it, I'm not going to say who, but a guy basically gets stabbed once and, you know, after a little bit of dialogue, gets stabbed several more times. And to me, I don't understand why anybody would sit there with their hands at their sides saying, please, you know, don't kill me, and then just let somebody stab them to death. I mean, you don't put up your, you can put up your hands to stop the person from stabbing him with the knife. He just like keeps his hands at his sides. I mean, I don't understand that.
It's like Vicky in Friday the 13th Part 2, who just backs into the door and waits for Jason to slowly walk across the room.
Yeah. Well, maybe when you get stabbed, you'll understand.
Well,
I'm just looking at Starry Eyes on IMDb, and you know, in the plot keyword section, it has swimming in underwear, breast, vomit, and panties. I'm sold.
There's the movie.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Well, there you go. So,
no, I'm telling you though, they would be defensive wounds. And Joseph, have you ever seen like any of the Forensic Files TV episodes? When somebody's attacked, they always have defensive wounds. So the makers of this movie dropped the ball on that one, at least. But the movie is still an 8 out of 10 regardless.
Mm. Okay. Well, that sounds good. I shall look out for that one. But
stop eating sweets.
Sorry.
It's not very professional.
It's because I've got a sore throat. It's a throat lozenge.
Lozenge.
It's a lozenge.
Oh, yes. Take a chill lozenge.
Nathan.
That's from Crinoline.
I know, but it's your true nature coming out. We're going to listen back to all these clips and realize who's the real bully.
No. Yeah. I was saying to chill out. That was a good thing.
Okay. Right. But anyway, Nathan, have you got anything else you'd like to
I went to Grant's Friday night, and we watched the remake to When a Stranger Calls, which I think is a really, really good movie.
What?
I don't understand the hate that it gets. I don't understand it.
It's just boring.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Yeah, you really are a hopeless case.
But I think 98 episodes is good enough for Nathan.
Yeah. Bye, Nathan.
Yeah. This will be Nathan's last appearance on Hysteria Continues.
How dare you all? But, I mean, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, so we watched it and we watched The Babadook. And, you know, you guys might have enjoyed The Babadook a little more if you watched it with Greg, because he watched that whole movie through his fingers. Anytime a movie is creeping him out, he'll like hold up his hand and watch the movie through his fingers, because he says it makes it less scary.
Jamie Lee Curtis does that apparently in real life.
Ah.
Which ties it to Terror Train. There you see, I've got tenuous links to Terror Train as well, Justin.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Jamie Lee, is she the one that turns into the cockroach in Nightmare on Elm Street 4?
The big hair? No.
Yeah.
I want to buy you that doll, Eric.
It looks brilliant.
Well, thank you, Nathan. I think before we, let's go on to the next clip, shall we, from zooming back. And we haven't had a top three in a while, and we're not having one this time, but several people have asked us about where did the cat flush in the toilet clip come from, and here is its genesis.
Okay, well, we're on to our number twos. So
big number two. We're back, baby.
We're back. I don't have any sound clips for flushing toilets. I mean, I can look for one if you want one, but no.
A cat flushing a toilet.
Sorry?
A cat flushing a toilet.
A cat flushing a toilet. I'll have a look for that.
I could take my phone and go flush my toilet real quick.
Well, you could do if you want to get it. Well, there's a... Oh, what's this? It's It's a cat flushing toilet song. Let's look at this. Let's see what this is about.
He's a cat. Flushing the toilet, 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 he's a cat.
Brilliant. So there you go. Anyway, so so Joseph, what's your big number two?
Like crap.
Oh dear.
Okay.
Oh
dear. We're done.
We're done. We're waiting. Yes, we're waiting on you, Joseph.
We're ready
to
on
follow
you,
through. Okay. What's your number two?
So that was the birth of the cat flushing the toilet. You couldn't make these things up, could you?
Unless you're wondering, it was in the 18th episode, The Incubus.
That's right. Unless Eric did.
And somebody complained about the cat flushing the toilet song.
Did they?
Yeah, somebody wrote in feedback, or they told one of us or something, because in the next episode, Justin was like, I don't want to overuse this song or something like that.
Yeah, and, that didn't happen.
That didn't pan out.
Maybe it's a copyright holder, but yes. So...
Yeah, just to say that the Inga clip was from episode 38, which was July 2012. And it was the day that we spent about 6 hours recording a two-hour show because of serious Skype issues.
Yes. Skype seems to have been, touch wood, a little bit... Oh, here we go. I should have cursed myself. Actually, talking of curses, we re-watched Drag Me to Hell yet again yesterday for the friend who came to stay. It said, because she's got two kids, she hasn't watched horror movies for years, so we eased her in gently with Drag Me to Hell, which I talked about many times before on the show, and it's always entertaining. The only thing that kind of surprised me, actually, is the woman in it, what's her name, Alison Lohan? She never made anything after that film. She retired from acting, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. Well, she was in another film that year, but she hasn't done anything since 2009. Apparently she retired from acting to have a family and hasn't been seen since. Well, not on screen anyway, which is a shame because I thought she was really good in that film.
Yeah.
But the other film I did see of note was I got the Arrow Blu-ray of Life Force.
Oh, yeah.
Tobe Hooper sci-fi horror mash-up, fuck-up kind of thing, basically, which if you've not seen it, is based on the book The Space Vampires and basically has... three nude vampires. One of them is a woman with big boobies, which you see her naked through the first half of the film. And there's two male vampires that you don't see naked very much at all. All their bits are always covered by conveniently placed something or other. They come and start sucking the life out of people in London. And then this huge zombie apocalypse happens in London and there's lots of nonsense. Apparently it was really good. It's a great Blu-ray, and the documentary about the making of it was very entertaining, with everyone talking about Tobe Hooper allegedly off his face through most of the making of the film, and why it was so completely batshit crazy. But I take it you've all seen Life Force, have you?
Oh yeah.
Yep.
No.
Oh, it's good.
No, I'm not a huge fan of sci-fi, and for some reason I thought this was a sci-fi movie.
Well, it starts off in space for the first 5 minutes, but then it's complete monster mashup mentalness.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. It's
you get to see Patrick Stewart snogging some bloke. Who does he snog?
He's Steve Railsback.
Oh, yeah.
I love Patrick Stewart.
It's just completely bonkers. I mean, it turns into a zombie movie about halfway through. It's basically a mashup between sci-fi and horror, but it's mostly horror, I would say. And they got Frank Finlay being really chewing the scenery. They all kind of do, don't they? But Frank Finlay especially looks like, to start off with, that he's really embarrassed to be in it, and by the end of it, he's completely as batshit crazy as the rest of them. But it's very entertaining, a very entertaining bad.
It's Tobe Hooper's best movie, Nathan.
Oh, yes.
Oh, how dare you.
That is my honest opinion.
Well, there
I love
go.
Life.
But I love that you directed it directly at me.
Well, here we go again. It's going to be the epic punch-up. Maybe this will be the last episode of The Hysteria Continues. If it turns into Unfriended. Yeah. One by one, well, we all get pulled off.
I don't
off.
Think there's an extra person on this call yet.
Not yet.
Do, do, do. Do, do, do.
Right. Okay. Well, that that is, well, that's the end of Recently Seen. So, should we go straight into Terror Train, or would you like another clip?
Let's do a clip first.
Do a clip. Okay. Yeah.
Well, while we're on the subject of Inga, I think we should maybe go for this one.
Eric, what is Mrs. Voorhees' first name?
Pamela.
Oh, I'm afraid that's incorrect.
Oh, that's
it
a trick
is
question.
Pamela Voorhees.
No, trick question, wasn't it?
Hmm. No, it's not Pamela.
No.
Mrs. Justin?
Sorry?
Do you know the answer?
I don't, but I know it's not Pamela.
It is on the gravestone of the final chapter. It says Pamela Voorhees.
Joseph?
Her name really is Veronica.
Mm.
Correct.
What? Where is it revealed that? Why does the gravestone say Pamela Voorhees in final chapter?
Now, go back and watch the first Friday.
Why does her gravestone say Pamela Voorhees in the final chapter?
So you got to go back and watch the first Friday the 13th movie. In the middle, the clue is right there.
Yes.
What?
You see it in her coat when she hangs it up. When she comes in, but before she starts fighting with Adrian King, she takes her coat off. And there's a.
I know what's going on. I know what's going on here. There's behind-the-scenes stuff going on here, isn't there?
Well, I will just say we were pulling your leg, Eric. You get a point because it is Pamela.
Getting the Inga train rolling early.
Yes, that was very naughty, Nathan.
That was a naughty thing to do for Christmas.
Very naughty. So
very.
But
very.
Eric won that quiz.
Yay! In your
he
face,
did,
everyone.
But that was one of the finest Inga tantrums, wasn't it, Eric? Was that your finest moment?
Possibly.
Well, there you go.
Although okay. I did have a meltdown during one of the Christmas quizzes where it was a true or false question and I got it wrong.
Oh, but on the next person, I mean, obviously they got it right. I remember that.
Yeah.
I like the one where, what was it? It was the Valentine's... Valentine's Bluffs, I think, is the answer Eric gave, and Justin, through the rest of that quiz, made a big deal about the S at the end of Valentine's.
Justin's Bluffs. Always bullying me. Yeah, you see, this is the truth. 100 episodes of bullying.
Well, Eric, if as we said plenty of times before, if we lifted the lid on what goes on behind the scenes, then people would be shocked, wouldn't they?
Why don't you play that other Jamie Lee Curtis clip?
Oh, what the. Oh, yes.
She has something interesting to say.
Hi, it's Jamie Lee Curtis here, and I just want to say that I love Toya, and think she is superior in every way to Susie. P.S. Justin smells.
So well, there you go.
I've got a funny feeling that isn't Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, who could it be? She said her name is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well,
there can't
know.
Be two Jamie Lee Curtises in the world.
But when I googled Inga69 at gmail.com, it came up with an address in Donnybrook, Dublin.
I don't live there. I don't live there.
You don't live there, but do you work there? Anywhere near there?
Maybe, but
that's funny, isn't it? But why has Jamie Lee Curtis been visiting Dublin recently?
She has. She's been filming the Scream Queens. That series has been filming in Dublin recently, so that's why she's here. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. Well, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt, Eric, and well, let's talk a little bit about Jamie Lee. And here is. The trailer for Terror Train.
Terror Train.
Everybody take off your mask.
Hey, take it easy, man. What are you doing?
Oh, my God.
Stay with your date.
I don't want to get back on that track.
Nobody does.
Help! Please!
Nice gag.
Somebody help me! Help!
You'll die. At this temperature, you'll die.
No!
You'll die.
the students aboard, it's going to be the one party to end them all.
They're always walking out of my parties. But this time, you can't.
My last big college party.
It's a joke. Goddamn practical joke.
Train.
I don't want to get back on that.
It's New Year's Eve, and a group of college co-heads have planned a masquerade bash aboard a charter train. What they didn't plan on was that a knife-wielding psycho would crash the party and begin slaughtering the guests one by one. Who is this brutal costume killer? Could it be a mysterious magician with a talent for swordplay, a former frat pledge with an axe to grind, or any number of guests, both invited and uninvited? Terror Train is obviously Jamie Lee Curtis's... well, I don't know. She kind of filmed this. I'm not sure if it's before or after Prom Night, but certainly around the same time.
After Prom Night.
Was it after Prom Night? Okay, thank you. This was one of the, with this and the Halloween 2, the follow, that kind of pretty much crowned her Scream Queen extraordinaire of the early 80s slasher boom, and with good reason. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis in any of these... slasher movies, whether they're good, bad or indifferent, and I enjoy all of her early 80s slasher movies, obviously, and although that Terror Train doesn't hold a candle to Halloween, really, although it was meant to be Halloween on a train, Jamie Lee Curtis's presence and personality and charisma does lift it above the humdrum, and she certainly shines, along with Hart Bochner and a couple other people in this film, but she shines in a Terror Train. If I'm, full disclosure, I enjoy Terror Train, but I have a little bit of a, not an issue with it, but I it's certainly not on Halloween, and it has its problems, like Prom Night has its problems with pacing, but when Terror Train is good, it's very, very good, and when it's cheesy, it's very entertainingly cheesy. It can be a trifle dull occasionally, but it's an entertaining movie that I'm glad we're discussing finally for our big 100. But I've got quite a bit more to say about it. But I will throw it open to Nathan and see what do you think of Terror Train?
Oh, I love Terror Train. I mean, I'd probably give it a 9.5 out of 10. I think it's that good. I love the music to it. The music in the film is really good, and it has one of my favorite chase scenes of all time in it. I love the chase scene between Kenny and Jamie Lee on the train when he's tormenting her inside that little office cage. I think that's one of the greatest scenes in slasher movie history, in my opinion, just in my opinion. Speaking of that, I already talked to you guys about this on Facebook, but what a trooper Jamie Lee Curtis is as an actress, because the scene where he has her up against the wall and she slides down and hits her head on the door, and there's no cutaway. I mean, the camera keeps going. So, I mean, she really cracked her head really hard there, and she kept going. So that goes to show you what kind of actress she is. So kudos to her for that. I guess if I had to pick a complaint about Terror Train, it would be number one, like Justin said, the pacing can be kind of a little off, especially around the middle, I guess, where they're doing a lot of the magic tricks and stuff. And I really like the character of Mitchie, and it really bothered me that she wasn't in the movie more. I think I would have liked to have seen more of her character. So I was a little disappointed that, she didn't, she wasn't around for much of it. And overall, I think I did not guess the twist at the end. So as we usually do, spoiler alert, everybody, I'm going to spoil it. The killer turns out to be the magician David Copperfield's assistant, you know, that's who's been the killer the whole time, which, you know, is Kenny in disguise, master of disguise. And also, I will say that Kenny picks some really creepy disguises, and the Groucho Marx and the old monk. Those are some really creepy disguises. So huge thumbs up from me for Terror Train.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you, Nathan. What about you, Joseph?
I think I'd agree with Justin. I really like Terror Train a lot, but when they get into the whole David Copperfield moments, it really kind of drags the film down, and I think he's very, you know, just bland and just kind of off-putting to watch. I've never really been into the whole, you know, stage magic thing. That stuff just bores me. I appreciate the craft, but, you know, I'm here to watch a slasher film, not a magic show. But, you know, having said that, this movie, you know, is very effective with a claustrophobia. You know, they're on a moving train, so there's really not too many places to go to, you know, evade the killer. I like the changing costumes. Rather than, you know, just dressing up in one costume, I like the idea of Kenny, you know, constantly swapping costumes throughout the film and pretending to be someone he's not to trick someone into kind of going off alone to get killed. I think that's a very effective touch. And I think Jamie Lee is like, she's really good here, especially, you know, towards the end when she's in that whole chase scene with, you know, between her and Kenny, like Nathan said, through the, you know, through the boxcars and the baggage area and in that cage. I think, you know, like the whole David Copperfield moments, I think she's kind of, where he's overutilized, I think she's maybe a little underutilized through the middle portion of the film. She just kind of sits around talking, and she doesn't really have, you know, a whole lot, you know, anything really interesting to say other than it's Kenny. We did something to that poor kid. I think for my money, the most interesting character is Hart Bochner, as the kind of the, I wouldn't call him a bully. I guess he's kind of a bully, but he's that obnoxious frat character. I just think he's I think he's really well written. He's certainly, you know, he's certainly a good actor. He's, you know, puts in a fine performance, but, for speaking of the middle portion, I would point, you know, to him as the kind of the saving grace of the middle portion of the film. And but, you know, where it really comes into its own is definitely in the last 20 or 30 minutes with all the chase scenes and everyone dying and, you know, them basically just kind of, you know, getting rid of all the cutting the fat, as it were, and just getting down to the, you know, what makes slasher films great. I'd give it maybe a 7 out of 10. Like Justin said, it's no Halloween, but you know what it does very well for the most part. And I do think the of all the disguises, the Groucho Marx with the cold dead eyes, I think that's the creepiest costume Kenny happens to put on that night. I did guess the twist because every time I'd see David Copperfield's assistant, I was like, that looks like a man. That has to be a man. I bet that's Kenny. I mean, it's so long ago, but I do remember guessing the twist. But, you know, it's a very effective film, and I'm glad we're covering it for the big 100.
Excellent. Okay, thank you, Joseph. Eric, what about you?
Yeah, well, sorry?
What about you?
Oh, right. Yeah, well, for a long time, I would consider this to be the lesser of Jamie Lee Curtis's horror quintet from this era. But in recent years, I would now say I prefer it to both Prom Night and The Fog. So it would be sort of Halloween, Halloween 2, and then Terror Train for me. I fall somewhere between Justin and Joseph and Nathan. I would possibly consider this an 8 out of 10 movie. One of the things about it is that in Prom Night, Jamie Lee Curtis is essential to my enjoyment of that film. If you'd taken Jamie Lee Curtis out, I don't think I would like Prom Night all that much. Whereas in Terror Train, she's brilliant in it, but I think anyone could be in that role and it would still be a good movie. For me, the essential component of Terror Train is Derek McKinnon as Kenny Hampson. I think he makes, as you were saying, he makes an eerie killer, especially, you know, with those evil eyes behind the Groucho Marx mask. And I love that final reveal. Like Nathan, when I watched Terror Train for the first time, I don't think I expected that reveal. And I was really sort of surprised and delighted about the fact that they don't hide this, you know, the magician's assistant, she's there, you know, up front and center in many scenes. And I just like the fact that they haven't cheated you when it comes to the final reveal. I thought it was quite clever. Hart Bochner, on the other hand, I find a bit pantomimey. He's a bit too villainous. And again, I mean, how on earth does this character manage to have any friends? I mean, we say this a lot on this podcast. How on earth does he have any friends? Even his best friend Mo. I mean, he does horrible nasty things to him all the way through the movie.
I think where I was talking about how he's well written is kind of at the end. You can tell he's kind of like, you know, right before he gets killed, he's kind of has that. That maybe he feels a little sorry for what he's done. He has that little moment. I think that kind of redeems him, but right before he gets killed, that's what I was thinking anyway.
Mm. Oh, I think he's entertaining to watch. I think he's very, very villainous though. And I always wonder how people want to be around him, you know, if he's that obnoxious. You know, he's constantly heckling the magician, you know, pretending to snore and you know, heckling, you know, causing grief to, you know, his girlfriend as well. He's just like an obnoxious sort of 12-year-old. He's kind of Inga-ish, you know, and I'm glad I'm not like that. did anyone pick up on homoerotic subtext between him and Mo, by the way? Because there's one point where he says to Mo, if she dumps you, then you've always got me. And then he seems very, very upset when Mo dies later in the film.
Well, his name is Mo.
Well, I didn't even pick up on the most obvious bit. Yeah, obviously his name is Mo. Yeah. It ties in nicely to kind of the transvestite theme that comes in later in the movie, I suppose.
I was going to say Meep was always talking about that, wasn't he? About the greatest, one of the greatest sort of doomed romances.
Yes. This movie's probably even gayer than Friday the 13th Part 7 and Freddy's Revenge put together. What do you think? It's probably gayer than one of Justin's Saturday Night parties in his house.
Eric.
I'm just saying, it probably is.
Well, why are you possibly gay shaming, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is the new me. I like tits now.
Do you? Have you been converted?
Yeah.
So you're now... do you go after stocky women with beards?
Yes, I do. Shovels.
There's probably lots of those in Dublin.
Yeah. Joseph and I got accused of being a couple yesterday.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah. By this like crazy woman.
What, online? Or?
It was on Facebook.
Well, you shouldn't have been kissing then.
They're basically, not to, you know, cut into Terror Train, but basically there's this topic on a news channel, you know, about gay marriage, and we get on there just to kind of rile the crazy Christians, and this woman, we were just tormenting her and just, you know, basically making her look like the fool, you know, not that she really needed any help, but basically she's like, you're sticking up for him, you must be his boyfriend or something like that.
Well, she was trying to bully me.
Yeah, she has a point. Yeah. So it's time the truth, the love that will not speak its name. Tumbleweed. Okay, yes. but back to Terror Train.
Yes, back to Terror Train.
I can't quit, Nathan. I'm sorry.
I actually like the magic in Terror Train, I have to say. I'm sorry. Yeah, I know this is David Copperfield's one and only sort of acting role, but I really like that bit where he puts a cigarette through the coin. And apparently, like, he does do all that magic for – he did that magic for real on the set, so the illusions you see are what the cast were seeing. There's no film trickery there. I just think it's kind of fun. I do agree that the pacing sometimes off, and the film runs maybe a bit too long. You know, it could have done with trimming 10 minutes. But overall, yeah, as I said, I much prefer it to Prom Night. I don't know how you guys would compare it to Prom Night. Do you think it's a better movie?
I like them both about the same. I think I might prefer Prom Night a little more because I think it's kind of, I guess it's a little creepier with the phone calls and, you know, the family, you know, family ties, as it were.
Sha-la-la-la.
Yeah.
I think I prefer Terror Train, but Prom Night is neck and neck with it just because of Wendy.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Wendy and the disco dancing. I miss as well.
Justin. Yeah, I mean, any finale at the disco is just, you know, it's hard to top.
Exactly. Unlike Eric.
You're very bold.
The thing that always made me laugh about this movie was that Kenny had set up this most amazing setup of being, you know, tricking David Copperfield, because there's no indication that he knew that his assistant was a murderous transvestite. But he almost scuppers the whole thing, doesn't he, by the killing of the first character with the sword outside. Because when he's staggering back with the sword stuck through him and everyone's just going, ha ha, what a joke, that's funny, and then leaves him to be run over. One, no one finds his corpse and lets the train know. Two, nobody stops and thinks actually maybe he's in trouble. So if he had been found with a sword cut through him, the whole plan would have gone down the toilet, wouldn't it?
Yes. Well, we were saying this about some film recently. It's like, what happens if somebody did, you know, X? That would be the whole film scuppered, the whole plot.
I know.
It happens all the time in Saw. It's like, if you choose option B, that means the end of the movie.
Mm. Mm.
And it's also, it would have been Kenny would have had to spend all that time putting on nail varnish, taking it off,
yes,
you know, doing his wig. It's kind of like, you know, even in RuPaul's Drag Race, they would have found that difficult to pull off all those different costume changes. But yes, I really like the whole thing of taking the costume of the person who's been killed and doing that. I think it's really clever. And I think Nathan was saying about how creepy actually the costumes look, because I'm not sure if it was actually Kenny underneath the mask. I don't know if
it is. Except for the scene where he's attacking Alana in the cage, they had a stunt double, but the rest of the time it's Derek McKinnon.
Because he's kind of amazing actually how much he does with his eyes. I find that the way he's looking, especially in the Groucho mask. Groucho Marx mask.
Groucho Marx mask.
Yes, his eyes. He just looks. Eye acting is a talent, I kind of guess, and he's certainly got it. And it's so I think it's quite very very accomplished performance by him. The other thing that stuck out to me was I couldn't unsee them was Jamie Lee Curtis's teeth. It's just before she got them fixed, wasn't it? Because they're very grey in this movie. Did anyone else notice?
I didn't notice that.
I didn't either.
I know it's mentioned a lot in that biography by David Grove that she was issues with her teeth, but it didn't distract me, no.
No, it's only because I'd read that and it just kind of, I zoned in on that and it just kind of, I don't know why, I just kind of couldn't. So, you know, sometimes you spot a little thing in a film and you can't look away. But I think there's lots to, I couldn't, at this time, for me, it's like a real potpourri of cheesy and classy, because you've got the fantastic cinematography. It looks great. Again, I don't hate the magic tricks. I quite enjoy them, but the whole film stops to say, hey, look at this, which I think is a bit of a cardinal sin in a thriller, is to stop the momentum just to do something.
Well, it's not really different to something like Graduation Day stopping in its tracks for felony.
No, it's not. But that you only have that once. Where in this you have it.
Yeah, but it's for 7 minutes in Graduation Day.
Yeah, but it's in this. It's stop start, isn't it? You keep on going back to him doing more different tricks and stuff. I mean, I don't hate it. It's just that at least at the end it would be really silly if you had the chase scene at the end and then it suddenly turned the camera panned around and David Copperfield was had a pack of cards in his hand and did a card trick. Then that would be really silly. But it's a real potpourri of classy and cheesy all the way through it, dotted all the way through it, and considering the talent they had behind the camera and on camera, that they seemed to know exactly what kind of movie they were making. I don't think
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I understand the need for the magic in David Copperfield's character because it ties in with, who Kenny is, but, I just think they could have trimmed it by about 10 minutes or so.
Mm. I thought it was interesting that when you know it's Kenny is a killer and you look, you can see they're not cheating, are they? The only thing they cheat with is the voice, isn't it?
Yeah, I assume it's somebody else's voice.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that's
the thing. It's definitely a woman's voice.
Or they could have just turned the pitch up on his voice, maybe.
It seemed too convincing to me. Mm. You know, as it seemed, and it also didn't quite fit either. I don't know. There was something slightly off with it.
Which, yeah, you know, it felt sort of post-dubbed or something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But
I think it's funny that you brought up RuPaul's Drag Race, because just from watching it, it takes, like you said, it takes hours and hours to put all that together and put that makeup on, because they have to do like so many layers of makeup and stuff. And it's funny that you brought that up, because I've never really considered that till now. That he actually had to put all this on, take it off, put it on, take it off.
Well, like, I'm expecting he must be sat or have a little somewhere. He's got like a, you know, pot of nail varnish remover, because when he kills Doc, he puts his hand on the shoulder and it's got nail varnish on. And then I think in the next scene, he hasn't got nail varnish on. So he's either got a clip on nails or stuck on nails, or he's somewhere taking his, you know, nail varnish off.
It's just like in any slasher film, you kind of have to, you know, put stuff like that aside. It's basically like, you know, a killer in an isolated location. You always wonder where he's hiding all his weapons he has, or you just kind of, you're like, eh, you just kind of roll with that. I guess you have to kind of, you know, roll with the whole makeup process as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've no problem with it, because it's an 80s slasher movie or late 70s slasher movie, perhaps. But it's... You know, it is what it is. It's kind of, yeah, we always cut slack, and that's part of the joy of them, really, isn't it? It's just sometimes it's fun to pick apart, or, you know,
yeah,
to do these things. But but also,
would he shantay, he stays, or would he sashay away, do you think?
Well, he sashayed away through the 100 foot, didn't he?
If he was on RuPaul's Drag Race, well, I wonder how he'd get on.
I'd like to see, you know, Kenny, you know, kill a bunch of drag queens in the Interior Illusions Lounge.
They still do need to make a drag slasher movie, don't they?
So, yeah, they do. It's a great idea.
That would be a really fun idea if they could do right.
They kind of Tommy Faircloth kind of did like a small moment of that in Crinoline Head 2, where the two drag queens go out into the woods and get killed. I think stretching that out to a feature, or at least maybe like a short film, would be very entertaining.
Yeah, definitely. And also RuPaul would be really probably good at it, because he did way back in the day, did like horror movies, didn't he?
If you watch, I mean, obviously you do watch RuPaul's Drag Race. They do a lot of horror movie references and, like, you know, homages on there. We were watching one a few weeks back where all the drag queens had to, you know, imitate the best, you know, who's the best scream queen. And I thought that was kind of interesting that they did that.
The new season that they're doing right now, they did a Death Becomes Her look, where you had to show up like dead as a corpse, you know, when you walk the runway.
Yeah.
Kenny Hampson, put the bass in your walk.
Head to toe.
Let your whole body
now talk. Go kill all these teenagers and don't fuck it up.
Fuck it up. The other thing that struck me when I first saw this, and also now, is actually how mean-spirited, or how, you know, genuinely macabre the opening scene is with Kenny and the corpse in the bed. It's actually quite nightmarish, isn't it?
That's very cruel. I can understand why he's killing all these people. I mean, that's one of the sickest, you know, practical jokes anyone's ever played in one of these types of movies.
Well, it really was quite nasty, wasn't it? Because there's the whole, when he's spinning and his voice goes, it slows down, and he's spinning, getting caught up in all the material hanging from the bed, afters, whatever. His voice slows down.
I'm sorry, but every time a killer spins in these movies, I laugh. There's one Nathan showed me a long time ago. What was it called, Nathan?
Are you talking about the movie that Justin likes so much? It's like Straight Jacket,
yeah, or
Dark Sanity,
where the killer just spins and spins and then falls out a window,
yeah. Or turns into Wonder Woman.
Yes,
I'm totally late to the game on this, but it suddenly dawned on me about the drag queen slasher movie. You could do like you have to lip sync for your life for real.
Yes.
Ooh, that would be good.
So there's so many there's so many, you know, avenues you could take with this. It's such a great idea.
Well, we do actually have a genuine drag queen who listens to the show. I don't know if you knew that.
Really? Who?
No, I didn't know that.
It is what's her name? It's Clitocora Brown.
I like the name. I've never heard of her.
Clitorica Brown. have a look at her on Facebook. She's a fierce queen, but she's got she's bearded as well, and she does these amazing makeups. Ooh. But she listens. I know she listens to the show because she's sent me a message. I don't know if she still does, but she certainly did. So if you're listening, Clitorica, you should get this get that drag queen RuPaul horror movie made, because that would be fantastic. So. But have you got anything else to say on the review of Terror Train before we get into some background? Anyone?
I guess that's a big resounding no.
No, okay.
Well, I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Okay, well...
I have to say I always thought the scene was kind of creepy where he almost kills Mitchie before he runs into Lizard Guy, which suddenly I forgot Lizard Guy's name.
Jackson.
Jackson, yes.
I also wanted to say I enjoyed Ben Johnson as the conductor. I think he was kind of a good, you know, I guess he's a sort of the Donald Pleasance of Terror Train. I think he was really good here.
He was, but also that another thing Kenny had to do was clean up all that blood in the bathroom, didn't he?
Yeah. He didn't think it through, really, did he?
No, and he would have had to get up and down through those corridors without being seen, and it's amazing, wasn't it?
But, well, he is a magician, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I have a quick question for you guys before we get to background. Since Kenny's motive is bullying and revenge, it's similar to Marty Ranson from Slaughter High's motive for bullying and revenge. So between the two, which character did you find more sympathetic?
Kenny
Hampson.
Kenny, definitely.
Actually, Slaughter High would be similar to Kenny Hampson. So, there you go.
Mm. Okay. I just meant both of the movies are similar to each other. So,
I just say, what should we all think of Donald Lamoureux as Shovels?
I saw him.
Yeah, in the movie. He's good. He's good in the movie, isn't he?
He's great at shoveling coal.
Eric said he wanted him to shovel his coal.
Yes. Well, now, yes. In 1980, no. He wouldn't have shoveled my coal.
Is he your new Bob Hoskins?
Except he's not in any movies.
And he's really alive.
Well, he's alive, which helps.
How do you know what he looks like now?
IMDb.
Ah, okay. Well, fair enough.
Did you miss that, Justin, because Eric went off on this tangent about how fantastic he was now?
I did see that, but I was too drunk to...
Oh, what a change.
Shock.
But at least I wasn't as rude as what Eric said. I couldn't repeat what he said without blushing.
Yes, fucked in your man cunt.
What?
What you said?
That's not what I said.
It was similar. You used the C word.
I don't have any recollection of that. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll post it on Facebook and then
no.
You'll
see.
Yes.
Anyway, let's just move on to some background. So I think probably first order of background is answering that question about which of us on the show potentially seduced by somebody from Terror Train. So who wants to step up to the mic?
Well, Eric, did you end up sleeping with him?
I did not end up sleeping with Kenny Hampson from Terror Train.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Actually, it was me. Nathan and I went to Monster Mania in 2010. We met Derek McKinnon, who was really nice, by the way. Talked to him for a few minutes, and Nathan can back me up on this because he was there. He kept winking at me, and like he would kind of grab my hand, and he gave me his room number and told me to meet him in his room. I don't know if he was drunk or if he was really attracted to me, but it was kind of a unique little... celebrity meeting there is all I'll
Maybe
say.
He just had a flirty personality.
He could have, I don't know, but he just he had the eyes for me. I guess it's kind of flattering in a way.
Well, yes, I think kind of flirting. Once you give someone your room number, it goes beyond flirting. Really,
yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
maybe.
What was funny is because I remember that night when he gave me the room number, I'm like, uh-oh, that's like six rooms down from where I'm sleeping.
Maybe he just needed some new towels.
Yeah, he could have. I kind of looked like a hotel porter that night. So.
Looked like a hoe, more like.
But But after that bombshell, you did try and get him for the show, not recently, but part of the reason that we haven't done Terror Train up until this point was that it was mooted quite a long time ago, wasn't it? But he did agree, didn't he, to an interview, and then it kind of went quiet, didn't it?
Yeah, what happens, I sent him a message and, you know, told him we'd like to interview him, and he was all for it. And then I think he took his, like, he logged off of Facebook and, like, you know, deactivated his account. And I'm not sure if he's back or not. I haven't really looked into it, but, I mean, he was open to the idea then. If he's back, you know, maybe it'll happen as like a mini-sode or something. We'll see.
Well, he won't if he listens back to this episode.
You should have gone to his room.
Well, I'm not saying anything bad. I'm actually flattered that he was, you know, hitting on me. I mean, I don't swing that way, but it was very flattering that, you know, a big slasher movie star was batting his eyes at me. And, oh, Derek, you were handsome that night.
I was dissed twice that weekend. First in that case, because I was getting the autograph first, and he was just like, you know, I mean, he was nice to me, but he was all about Joseph. So, you know, I mean, I was dissed then, and then later was worse, because that night we were all drinking at the bar, and we were with some friends of ours, and one of the guys, I guess he saw another guy and he thought that he was really attractive, and he made some comments about it. Well, one of the girls just kind of heard like the tail end of it, and I was standing next to him, and she was like, "Oh, are you talking about him?" Like pointing at me about this guy he thought was so attractive. He's like, "Oh no, not him, this guy." I was like, "Gee, thanks, I appreciate it."
Well, see, that was in my Adonis days when I was like when I was a chiseled god. So I guess that's why he was hitting on me. Now I'm just a fat blob of Eric.
Hey.
But it's good because I'm hairy, you know, like you like.
No, well, I don't.
You do like hairy men.
Yeah, but don't like bullies.
He likes nice hairy men.
But my ultimate fantasy is to go to some convention with Justin and meet Susie. And Susie's all about me, and she just wants to talk to me all the time, and Justin's left in the shadows. That'd be so brilliant.
Well, you can go, Eric, to... Well, you can't do that, but you could go and meet Toya. Couldn't you? Did you see?
Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she's at the local flea market in Dublin.
Well, it just goes to show. I'm not going to say anything apart from the facts, which is that this year, you've probably heard of Glastonbury Festival. You know, it's a big deal and it sells out in 2 hours. So what they're doing a new festival called, I think it's called Glasto Budget. And it's basically, it's a cheaper festival where they get the people who are playing they get the tribute bands to play the cheap version of the festival. So you go and watch the people who might be playing the official one. You get the tribute bands, like, you know, the knockoff Rolling Stones or whatever. But Toya is headlining herself at this knockoff tribute act festival. But as there isn't a tribute act to Toya, surprisingly,
because nobody can, because she's just too unique.
She's going to be headlining knockoff Glasto. So there you go.
You know, Justin, maybe around the sixth or seventh episode, you know, a long time ago, you made a reference that, you know, the whole Susie and Toya debate was finally coming to an end. We're up to 100 episodes now, and it's still going. Would you say now is the time to retire it, or is it going to go on for another 100 episodes?
Well, I'm quite happy to draw a...
yeah, right.
No, you're not.
I'm happy to take taking the mature, the more mature.
There's nothing mature about you.
Until the next episode, at least.
But who started it? As talking about maturity.
It's you.
No, you started it. You said your favourite, your fantasy was to humiliate me in front of Susie.
Well, that was just today. But I mean, the start of the whole thing overall in the global sense was you.
Was it, though? I don't think it was.
I think it probably was.
We should have gone back and listened, but we haven't got that clip, but maybe for next time. But it's background. So we've talked about the almost seducing of Joseph. So
Before you get into more background, do you have another clip to play?
Oh, well, yes, the last of the clips. We're going to have a little mishmash of clips at the end of the show, but here's another classic.
This is from our good friend, Tosca Top Socks.
Yay.
Hey.
He says, "Hey, you guys, hope all is good with you. Did you know that Alan Dale is in Neighbors?" No, he didn't.
Which one was he?
Oh, yes. So, another classic clip. Well,
oh,
we
Alan Dale.
Show. Alan
yes.
Dale, yes.
What sneaky misadventures will you get into next?
So, okay, right, background. So, Joseph, as you talked about, Derek, have you got any other anything else for us?
No, I'm going to leave the background to you. That was just my little anecdote for this episode.
Okay, well, Nathan, how about you?
Well, David Copperfield is actually a real magician. That's not just for the movie.
Right.
And that's all I got.
Okay, well, thank you, Nathan. Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, there are a couple of original titles for this movie, which included Terrible Train, which is a terrible title. Switchback was another title. I think that was the one that was offered. That was the title that was used when it was offered to Jamie Lee Curtis, and she liked the title.
There's another movie called Switchback it's set partially on a train with Dennis Quaid and Danny Glover.
Is it a train term? Is it a locomotive term, Switchback?
I think so. They have those little cranks between trains, and they do the switch. I think that's why it's called Switchback, but yeah.
The producer, Daniel Grodnick, also produced the wonderful Without Warning. He was friends with John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, and he mentioned to them that he was making this film that he was, you know, pitching as Halloween on a Train, and they said, oh, well, go for it. And he thought initially they might have some misgivings about ripping them off, but they didn't. It was shot in 25 days in the winter of 1979, November and December, in a warehouse in Montreal using real train carriages. The budget, I was getting different figures for this, so Justin, you might be able to clarify. I was getting $4 million on one source and other sources saying 3 or possibly 2.7. Did you get a definitive budget?
Well, what I saw, Variety said it was budgeted at $1.4 million.
Oh, even less than I thought.
So
wow.
I don't know. But I think 20th Century Fox spent huge amounts of money promoting the film. So they may have put that into some of the budgets, which may be why it's, you know, because $1.4 million was not a massive budget back then, but it's certainly much more than Halloween was.
Yeah. Definitely. The majority of the cast and crew had to be Canadian, obviously, to take advantage of the Canadian tax breaks that were being offered. So a guy called T.Y. Drake was hired to flesh out the story that was initialized by the producer, Daniel Grodnick. And he says in the book, They Came From Within, that if he hadn't been broke, he wouldn't have accepted the gig. So it's yet another case of somebody looking down on their, you know, slasher movie past.
Sorry, Eric. Sorry to interrupt you, but I that was bugging me, so I looked it up. Switchback actually refers to like hairpin turns on a train or a roller coaster. So there.
Yeah, I don't think you get hairpin turns on a train.
Well, basically, when they take those, there's like when they switch over to the tracks that kind of burr off. I had to look that up. Sorry.
That's okay.
Oh,
thank you for that.
And Eric, I have a question for you. My phone kind of cut out. Who was the actor that you're talking about that was kind of looking down on it?
Oh, it's not the actor. It's the writer. T.Y. Drake is his name. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a couple of original premises to the movie that weren't used. Originally, the train was supposed to break down near a mental institution where a patient escapes and boards the train. And then a later draft, the prank that starts off the film involved assaulting two nerdy guys, tying them together naked and pushing them out into a lake in a boat so all the students at a graduation picnic could see them.
Wow, I like the mental institution idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, but one of the naked guys ends up drowning, and that's the springboard point. I don't even know what I'm trying to say there.
The impetus.
That's it. The starting off point for the mayhem.
Yes.
Yeah. Ben Johnson had been an Oscar winner for 1979 movie, or 1971 film, The Last Picture Show, which I haven't seen because I don't watch highbrow cinema. Derek McKinnon, who plays Kenny, of course, we've been talking about him. He actually was a drag performer in Montreal at the time. So maybe that's how he got his skills, you know, honed for taking his makeup on and off in really, really sort of rapid fashion. Vanity, who plays Mary, who's very much a background character, she had a big hit later in the 80s with the song Nasty Girl, which I think was remixed recently by somebody else.
And you know what else? She was also in The Last Dragon, which is one of the greatest 80s movies of all time.
What's The Last Dragon?
It's Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. She plays like a Soul Train like host at a nightclub, and it's basically like a spoof of like Bruce Lee movies, but it's like blaxploitation Bruce Lee type.
Oh, cool.
It also features Lou David, who played Cropsey in The Burning. So.
Oh.
Well, he's
Is
in
that
it
the
like
one with Shownuff?
Yeah, Shownuff. He's Lou David's in it for like 5 seconds, but they're it's a tenuous link to slasher films right there. Two of them, actually. So.
Cool.
It's very funny and fun, so check it out. But anyway, go ahead.
What's it called again? The Last Dragon.
Yeah, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Very 80s. Very 80s.
Excellent. Okay, well, John Alcott lit the movie. He's this cinematographer, and he'd just come off working on the Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, where he would do maybe, you know, one setup every 3 days, and he was delighted to be working on a film where they were trying to get tons of stuff done within 30 days. Sadly, he died of a heart attack in July 1986. Roger Spottiswoode, this is his first film. They interview him on the Terror Trap website, where he says that they asked him if there was any gore cut from the movie, because they say that a lot of the murder scenes are cut quite abruptly in the film. He says that this was deliberate, and he made it deliberately tame in the gore department with quick cutaways from the moments of violence. However, the screenwriter T.Y. Drake, the one who looks down on the movie now, says that he remembers seeing a preview screening of the movie and thinking it was much bloodier than the version that finally got released, so we'll never know. There's this book that myself and Justin have. I don't know if you guys have read it. Jamie Lee Curtis' Scream Queen by David Grove. I referred to it earlier. But Derek McKinnon is quoted in as saying that Jamie Lee was very, very precious on the set about not showing any cleavage because she was on the cusp of having a boob job done. And she didn't want people to notice the increase in the size of her boobs in subsequent movies. So that's why she wanted, you know, her blouse to be buttoned up in this one. Although Jamie Lee Curtis completely denies this, as you would. The film was released on the 3rd of October 1980. It debuted at number 2 and made a little over $10 million. It's argued again in the same book that it might have done better if it had been marketed as a Jamie Lee Curtis movie, because apparently the promotional campaign kind of downplayed her involvement and pushed Ben Johnson to the forefront. Terror Train 2 had been in the back of producer Sandy Howard's mind had the movie been a bigger success. And they even filmed an alternate ending, apparently, where Kenny survives a fall into the river. But the sort of lackluster box office and then the realization that Jamie Lee Curtis was kind of trying to quit horror movies at the time meant that they didn't return, you know, for a Terror Train 2. Derek McKinnon says that he was offered a lot of horror movies after Terror Train, including Happy Birthday to Me and My Bloody Valentine, which are other, you know, Canadian horrors around the same time. But he turned them down. He actually visited the mines that they were going to shoot My Bloody Valentine in and found that he would find them too claustrophobic, so that's why he said no to that one. He wasn't originally cast in Terror Train. They had somebody else in the role, but when Derek came in to audition, they thought he was ideal, so they paid the other guy off and got him in to play the role of Kenny. He worked as a casting director after this on films like Dead Ringers and Raise the Titanic, and he produced a 1992 documentary about drag queens called My Name is Justin. No, it's actually called Lip Gloss, but I think its alternate title in the UK was My Name is Justin Kurzweil.
Okay.
And that's what?
What? Well, Eric, what? I think you know, us three and the listeners all know.
All know what? That you're a drag queen, yeah.
No, all know that you're being the bully on this 100th episode, Eric. I thought you would be kinder.
100 episodes of bullyisms.
Yes.
Well, that's Eric, all. Yeah. An Eric Threlfall retrospective.
Yes. Okay.
Is that everything?
Yeah, Justine, it's your turn now.
Thank you, Erica. Yes, well, you said a lot of what I was going to say, but that's not a problem because... the film was being discussed as early as kind of, I think, June sort of 1979. And it got filmed later in 79. But it didn't get... originally going to be released in June 1980, which would have meant it would have been released around the same time as Friday the 13th. And it may well have done a lot better, perhaps, at the box office. It was then mooted to be released around Halloween 1980, but it got pushed forward to earlier in October 1980 because the the producers and, well, 20th Century Fox were worried that there were too many slasher movies coming out at the time, and the audience might get diluted, which is exactly what happened. Because I think they were all at the time, all these major studios were picking up these kind of independent movies and thought they could get the kind of figures that Halloween and Friday the 13th got. You know, with Halloween, I think it's 70 odd million, and Friday the 13th, it's like 40 odd million dollars at the box office. So $10 million at the time was actually considered a relative flop. Because although the film didn't actually cost that much money, it was budgeted at I think $1.4 million in when they talk about making it in June 1979. It may have had more, but I couldn't find the exact figure, but apparently they threw a massive amount of money at it, a huge marketing campaign. They released it about 1,000 prints across America. So for it to open at number two and get a final tally of about 10 million was a disappointment for them. I'm trying to think what else we said. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis seems to be, I don't know, she seems to be, I think she prefers this one, doesn't she, to Prom Night.
Definitely,
which she kind
yeah.
of dubbed Disco Death. There's a quote from her, let's see if I can find it, of her talking about the film. She says, there are certain things a heroine in a thriller has to be. She has to be vulnerable so that the audience identifies with her and is rooting for her. But she also has to have an enormous inner strength to overcome the evil or terror that's pursuing her. I play the same kind of characters I did in other films, but Alana, the girl I play, is stronger and more defined. So I think she, she definitely has a, although she's, there's, we talked about at the end of Prom Night where she has that kind of certain pathos to the role and she kind of transcends perhaps the material. She is, more of a fully rounded character in this than pretty much any of the other characters in the film, which is, of course, is kind of understandable. Apparently, it was all. I think if we talked about this, but the film was shot on a real train, and they actually had to have people rocking the train from side to side to actually get that thing. But I don't know if you noticed throughout the film that, like, for instance, when Ben Johnson and the other conductor in the sitting down drinking and playing cards, the train is kind of swaying from side to side. But when you actually get to the David Copperfield magic, there's no swaying on the train whatsoever. So they were quite inconsistent with that. But they had to film at night to make sure that they got the right feel, and because it was too noisy otherwise. And apparently the smoke and things they got was partly used by using church incense. I'm trying to think if there's anything the producer Sandy Howard and Harold Greenberg's other 1980 picture was also a horror movie set on a vehicle, but it was Death Ship, which is the Nazi ghost story. Have you all seen Death Ship?
Yes, I quite like it.
Yes, mm-hmm, I agree too. With Eric.
Yes.
Yeah.
It receives a lot of negative reviews even from horror fans, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, I mean, it's no Terror Train, is it? But it's quite a good film. I mean, Ben Johnson apparently signed on to do the film without reading the script. And I don't know whether he regretted it or not. But yes, it was a huge mistake, really, to try and advertise the film on the strength of Ben Johnson's name, which I'm sure a lot of people at the time, audiences, would have known. But they're not the kind of people who would have gone to see a teen slasher movie. And it always surprised me, actually, with both Prom Night and Terror Train, that Jamie Lee Curtis, although they said it was a massive coup to get her onto those films, they didn't actually exploit her name more. I never really understood why they didn't do that, but they
Well, you would think, like, by the time Terror Train came out, Prom Night had been a hit, The Fog had been a hit, Halloween had been a hit, so surely they would have played up her name. I can understand it kind of with Prom Night, because she really only had Halloween and The Fog had probably just come out.
But there you go. That's kind of pretty much all I've got that Eric hadn't covered. But the film, the only thing I was going to say, that when I was so desperate to... So, well, I'd seen the film, I had the old, I'm not sure, I think it's Key, was it Keynote? It was the VHS from the States. I had an old video, I still got it actually.
Key Video? I think it's
Key Video,
just Key,
that's right.
Yeah.
And but it wasn't out on DVD for ages and ages, and then it finally came out. The only place I could get it was a Spanish DVD, which I know, yeah.
I wonder what story you bought that in.
Well, exactly. That's going back to things. But when I got it, I was so desperate to watch it. It didn't have any subtitles and it was in Spanish. So we watched the whole thing in Spanish, which was quite bizarre, without subtitles. Gosh. But then finally, it had come out on a fantastic release by Scream Factory on Blu-ray. Although, having said that, I watched it. So that's the version I watched this time, and it's surprisingly they didn't clean the print up that much. There's quite a lot of I don't know what you call them, what the technical term is, but like dirt and pops and crackles on the beginning of the film. Yeah, well, no, those kind of, you know, little white, you know, little bits of damage to the thing. So they didn't do a full restoration of the film, but it looks good. It looks, you know, it is what it is. It's a classic early 80s slasher movie. So it's a good one for us to be covering for episode 100.
Yeah, I suppose we should mention as well that Hart Bochner went on to have another prominent role in a slasher movie 20 years later in Urban Legend's Final Cut.
Yes.
And I love that film. I absolutely love that movie.
I don't think I've seen that since it came out, so I must revisit it at some stage.
Yeah. Oh, it's so entertaining.
That's the one that borrows the killer's disguise from Graduation Day, isn't it?
Yes, yep. The fencing outfit. Yeah.
Yes. So, anything else left to say about Terror Train, or should we move on to some feedback?
I think that one of my favorite scenes in Terror Train is when Jamie Lee Curtis is asleep after being attacked, and you see Kenny climbing around the outside of the train.
That is really creepy.
Outside the window.
Yeah,
I like that moment as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good scene in it.
The one thing missing from this train-themed horror movie was a new wave band singing Everybody's Got Something to Do, Everybody But You.
Yes, I have to agree.
Technically, wasn't Terror Train like loosely remade as just Train with Thora Birch?
That's right, because it was mooted as to be remade properly, and I think for a long time people thought, oh, it's actually going to get a decent remake. But I think when the torture porn was in vogue, they decided to change it around, so it became Train with Thora Birch, which was a story about torturing young American athletes on an Eastern European train at high speed, which I saw once, and once was enough.
Yeah, it's pretty dreadful.
They messed up by not remaking or trying to make it a slasher movie, because I mean, making it a torture movie, that made it just so forgettable to me. I mean, I don't know, it was just another in a long line of them, and it, you know, I don't really remember anything about it.
Yeah, well, I remember it being, it's, you know, I'm kind of glad that whole torture porn thing has kind of died a death, literally, now, but it was pretty, you know, I remember it being pretty poor, really. But yeah, the film is yet to have a remake. I imagine the idea of making a film on a train these days it will probably put quite a lot of people off, because it was a very challenging shoot from all accounts, and shooting in any kind of confined space must be a technical nightmare, you would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Terror Train. Have we got any feedback for the show?
Well, I don't know about Facebook feedback, but I have none in our email account, so which is kind of surprising.
For the 100th show?
I know. Yeah.
Do we have anything on Facebook? Who would like to look that up for us while I play the contact details, how to contact the show and tell us how fantastic we are on for our 100th episode? So just coming up now.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
So, if you'd like to write to us, please do. Because we have a dearth of feedback on our 100th episode. So, Eric, make a sad face.
I have one.
Oh, okay, Nathan.
I found it on our Facebook page. Yeah. It was written a few weeks ago, but okay, so he says, "Hi, my name is Brennan, and I've been a longtime listener of the podcast. I figured I should probably let you know I'm here. So I'm here. Hello. I've been a slasher fan since high school, which admittedly, wasn't too long ago. I'm graduating college this month, and I'm currently working on reviewing every 80s slasher film ever on my blog, Popcorn Culture. Your podcast and websites have been very instrumental in me compiling the most thorough list I could have possibly ever imagined. As I'm sure you're aware, it's a tall order. My favorites are the Friday the 13th franchise, The House on Sorority Row, He Knows You're Alone, Terror Train, the Prom Night franchise minus the dreadful remake, Night School, Killer Party, and a million more. But enough about me. I have a question for you all, but especially Nathan in particular. As a hardcore slasher fan, is it ever difficult to maintain a relationship with someone who doesn't appreciate them as much as you? It's such a big part of your identity, so does it ever cause conflict? Or do you get all of your slasher urges out through the podcast, etc.? And it doesn't end up being a problem. It's just a topic I've been thinking about considering the public at large's general distaste for the things. Thanks for reading, and I'm definitely going to keep listening. Congratulations on 100 episodes. That's quite an undertaking. That's from Brennan Klein.
To answer his question, as long as any significant other I'm with, as long as they don't have a problem, then it doesn't really matter if they like them or not, as long as they don't try to belittle me for it.
Well, yes, I've kind of my partner doesn't hate them, but doesn't really like, you know, seeing them all, doesn't really want to watch them again, so hasn't really got their rewatchability, so value for him. So I, you know, I kind of watch them on my own, basically.
Yeah, I watch them on my own as well.
Mm. Wes hates them. I mean, he hates like when I make him watch these movies. But if he's going to make me watch his stuff, then he's got to watch my 80s slashers too. Exactly. And he can be really fun sometimes, you know, because he'll watch some and, you know, he'll have a lot of fun comments because he's like he picks them apart, you know, and that can actually be a lot of fun. So,
well, it's like one time Derek and I were just sitting around and he was like, "I don't really want to watch a slasher film tonight," and I was like, "Come on, Derek."
Oh, there he's gone.
Well, and there you go. That's
there goes my Joseph love. There goes
remembering.
There goes my love, babe.
Do you know what I just had? I just had a Skype request from somebody called Magic Wench 32. So it could be unfriended after all. Does anyone else get these kind of spam?
Yes, that happens all the time.
But funny, well, yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Although Magic Wench 32 does sound like somebody you'd be friends with.
That is true, actually. Yes. But I think they may be going for the slightly wrong demographic. I think they're throwing the
message. I was thinking, since we have very little feedback, it might be time for Eric's joke of the week.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, my joke of the week. I forgot about that.
Oh, Eric, you're so excited there. You sounded like you took helium. Okay,
Eric,
here we go.
Please play the joke of the week now.
It's my joke of the week. It's so fantastic.
Who is hot and gritty and stars in Terror Train? Sandy Curry. Gritty because of the sand.
And hot because of the curry.
The curry.
Yeah.
You put a lot of thought into that one, didn't you, Eric?
She plays Mitchie in Terror Train.
She does. That was... I can't say that is one of your best, Eric.
Well, that's because you're stupid.
Okay, well, that's better. Thank you. See, Inga, we knew Inga. So a little bit of needling and Inga would reappear at the 100th episode.
Inga will
very,
never
very
die.
Good. Very
I
good,
I expected
Eric.
More from you for the big 100, Eric.
Well, I was struggling this week.
I'm disappointed.
Well, you're all stupid.
Yes.
I laughed.
No, it's very good, Eric. Yes, but
just because the humor is too sophisticated for you, numbskulls.
Hey, the cat's making an appearance on the 100th episode.
See, Argento. It's a shame Argento couldn't make it today. But he's,
I should say that Brennan Klein. If anybody wants to check out his blog, it's jiffypopculture.blogspot.com.
I like and that name.
He's got a really good blog, so I mean, it's worth looking at because he interviews he reviews a lot of movies, but he has been specifically doing slasher movies on one part of his blog.
Cool. Okay. Well, yes, check that. We'll check that out. And talking of reviews, the 400th review will be up on Hysteria Libs in within a week, hopefully. And I chose When a Stranger Calls, the original When a Stranger Calls, for that. So I've done a very in-depth review and looking into the background of that. So that's going to be up shortly, hopefully. Maybe have another bonus review. So, but well, sorry.
I'm sorry, I had to clear my throat.
Okay.
I thought I heard the word blood lake there.
Yeah, I did.
Well, that's the kind of there's not a massive gap between clearing your throat and blood lake.
No, avoiding your bowels, maybe
blood lake, but, getting all that phlegm out.
We are just a little bit of news. We are going to be taking a little bit of an extended break before the next episode. We're having a month off, so the next episode.
Four years and 100 episodes, I say we deserve a break.
We deserve a break. So we will be back in about 4 weeks' time. Well, exactly 4 weeks' time, yes. Won't we? It's Eric's pick. And Eric, you've got a slightly, potentially controversial pick.
Well, it's not really my pick. This is the first of the listener picks from the recent Gordy graduation. I can't remember what the website you did your crowdfunding on.
Indiegogo.
Indiegogo fundraising thingy. Do you know who's picked this, Joseph?
Yes, it's Michael Alishan.
Michael Alishan has chosen one of my favorite movies of all time. I discussed it before when we did our top three 70s horror movies. It was my number one, and it is Alien.
Yes.
So it's a slasher movie in space without a slasher, really. But
it'll be it's going to be interesting to discuss it. And I'm going to see, we discussed before, I think going to see Alien on the big screen on Friday.
In a planetarium, is it?
In a planetarium.
Oh, yes. Wow. That's awesome.
So, So
slightly jealous Friday. Over here.
Well, I shall let you know what it was like in 4 weeks' time. But no, thanks to both of our listeners for making the last 100 episodes so memorable. we know who you both are.
Yes, to you both, I give you this.
Now we've only got one.
Oh, sorry.
And he's asleep. we will be back. And, thanks for joining us for the 100. And hopefully we've got more to come. We'll be back and we'll be jetting off to space for a bit of Ripley. And
believe it
or not, yes.
Yes. Thanks. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the last 100 episodes. Who posted something about how many days worth of stuff we've got on here?
I don't remember who it was, but it was overall, if you combine all the episodes, it's like it would take 9 days to listen to every episode.
Go on. Well, there's a challenge for you. So, but what are we going to play out with, Eric?
It's just the end credits music for Terror Train, I think.
Okay. Well, it might be.
But did you notice at the start, by the way, in the intro, I was using Thomas the Tank Engine? I'm not sure if that.
I was wondering what that was from, but I didn't know.
That's the theme music from Thomas the Tank Engine. I don't know if you got that over in the States, but it was a popular children's TV show in the
80s. We know what Thomas the Tank Engine is.
Yeah, I was too mature, Eric, to recognize it.
You're too old, basically, is what you're saying.
Grandpa. What surprise do you using?
Oh, yeah, because you're celebrating your 65th birthday between now and when we next record.
Stay tuned for another 100 episodes of this.
Yeah. anyway, but hopefully we'll get a live report of Toya at Cheapo Glasto. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll play out with, and also some clips from that we've amalgamated from the past shows that you might find entertaining. So thank you for listening, and say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Hello?
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I just had sex with Derek and Ken.
Well, was it fun?
That's okay, yeah.
What position were you?
Reverse cowgirl.
Ah.
And I thought the acting of the lead girl picks up considerably, and she reminds me a bit of Amy Steele in those final 5 minutes, whereas she was completely...
Eric, how are you?
I'm Fred Ingham.
Oh, okay. So you've been going down under?
I'm Fred Ingham.
Okay.
I would love to see Jimmy Stewart, like, decide that he has no reason to live, but then just turn on everybody and start killing them.
Yeah.
Grace, there's a sinister-looking man trying to kill me.
Well, one thing I was wondering about is, Howard, David Duke's character, goes to, you know, basically destroy Rawhead Rex at the cemetery, and he gets that, basically, that cunt from the altar.
And Susan Kiger was always worried her thighs were too fat. So there you go, it's kind of...
He just goes on to say, I want. But we were in London only for 2 days. And then
the police were here, Daddy.